Hi, and welcome to the Back and Forth podcast through the Living Waters Church website. I'm Luke Knight, and tonight we are discussing women in ministry in the 21st century. It's going to be a blast. We're going to be with you for about an hour, and we are gathered tonight around a table in Langley with muffins and tea, tree hugger tea, right, Clark? and we're just going to have a talk about this. And we've got a couple of couples with us tonight with a lot of experience and a lot to share. And so we think it's going to be a rich discussion for you. We're going to begin by asking them to introduce each other. So we have Darcy and Leanne McAllister and Clark and Kim Moran. So let's begin with the McAllisters. Darcy, who is Leanne McAllister?
Complex.
Leanne McAllister, met her at Bible College. Former Princess of Penticton. Oh. So known for her her beauty. And known for her ability to sing. So she smote my heart. We started ministry together. Doing ministry together, Darcy and Leanne, and then with kids that shifted, and shifted to a place where Leanne wasn't even able to minister where we were at. Leanne is on staff at Living Waters Church, and we feel really blessed that she's been allowed to participate fully in ministry there. She was the interim pastor before kind of the team took Living Waters, and one of the council members said we weren't sure what she could contribute, but now, like, she's okay. this is good. And she also so she serves on staff at Living Waters. She works with me a day a week in my missions world. She is a mom of three teenagers, soon to be 20-year-old for the oldest. She loves music. She's also studying at Acts Seminary. And she speaks and teaches with me and without me all across Canada. And we even sometimes call her an international speaker.
Wow, glowing.
That's a bit of a stretch, yeah. But yeah.
So Leanne, who's Darcy?
So Darcy and I have been married for, I don't know, 23 years or something like that. And it's interesting because Living Waters doesn't get to really see, you know, his role, but he's a fantastic leader in his own right. And he works for the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada in international mission. And so that's why we travel together. And he looks after the mobilization and care and support of global workers all around the globe. And I'm so proud of him.
And you guys have three kids.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool.
Two young adults and one teenager.
Very cool. Clark, tell us about Kim Moran.
Kim is a
highly acclaimed
princess of Port Hope, Ontario. Highly acclaimed singer. Walls decorated in gold records. Kim and I dated for 6 years before getting married in July 7th, 2007. And whether I was doing this or not, Kim made it very clear to me when we first started dating that that God had called her to ministry, and in what capacity she wasn't quite sure yet, but she knew that there was a call on her heart that needed to be fulfilled, and that she needed to obediently chase down. We pastored together for 4 years in Bowmanville, Ontario, just about 45 minutes outside of Toronto. So we were the youth pastors and junior high pastors there together for a great season. We saw some amazing things, and I very luckily got to watch from very close hand as God began to put dreams and visions in my wife's heart that I knew that he was asking and calling me to come alongside and support, and I watched as she began to mature and continues to mature into this incredible woman of God that's leading young girls from around the world to find out who it is that Jesus has called them to be and to reach their full potential in Christ with no limits. And she's studying at Southeastern University, working on her master's in ministerial leadership. I study alongside her as I sit on the couch and watch PBR episodes of my favorite program or whatever sports game I missed the night before. Now we pastor together at Summit Pacific College. We're the campus pastors, and we oversee chapels and spend time with students that are unpacking their call and what it is that God has called them to do. Kim works very specifically with the girls, and I spend time with the guys. We share time on Wednesday evenings, and we just enjoy doing life and doing what God's called us to do together. And yeah.
Very cool.
And she's fantastic and beautiful and all those other pieces too. Yeah.
Very cool. Tell us a bit about Clark, Kim.
So Clark already gave you a little bit of our life story there, so I won't go over that again. But we have had the opportunity. We have had the opportunity to pastor together. So he is definitely a very gifted and talented pastor and preacher, speaker. And so he has had the opportunity to travel around and speak to a lot of young people, a lot of teenagers and young adults, and had a chance to really develop his gifts and reach a lot of people that way, which is really cool. And now we both pastor together at Summit. So he is the campus pastor and senior recruitment there. So he basically gets to sell people in the school. So I think that most pastors have to be fairly good salespeople too, to be able to kind of sell themselves and sell the gospel. So that part of what he's good at, he uses in that way. And so he's been the biggest support in my life, and we both just try and cheer each other on in everything we do. We share offices right beside each other, so we really have to enjoy being together. So we do.
Very cool. Okay. Well, let's get down to some of the questions. I have a few in front of me that we think are going to be valuable to discuss. And so my first question I'm going to put to both Leanne and Kim, and maybe we'll kick off with Leanne. When did you first feel you were meant to serve in ministry in the capacities that you're sort of doing now? And what did that journey look like, sort of briefly?
Yeah. Well, when I was about 15 years old, I remember being at the church that I grew up in, and for some strange reason, I ended up being in the adult midweek Bible class, and my youth pastor thought it would be a really good idea to have a youth actually teach the adult Bible class, which was kind of a strange thing. And I remember kind of saying, I'll do it. And I remember, and I probably didn't say anything of significance really or that deep, but I remember in that moment going, bang, like this is a part of your future. You're going to help unlock scripture for people. And you're going to bring it down to like just a real accessible level. And so I prepared for ministry, went to Summit, fully believing that God had called me, regardless if I had gotten married or not. Darcy was just the bonus, like for to meet someone that that I was so compatible with and loved so dearly, who also felt that call to ministry, was just beautiful. But if I hadn't have met him, I would have been in ministry. The actual journey was difficult. It got difficult, I think, when my call was misunderstood. There were some settings that I was in that were totally supportive and saw me not just as a sidekick to Darcy, but saw me. And so there were some settings that were incredible, particularly early in ministry. And then there were some settings that people would put me into a role of a pastor's wife. And I love pastor's wives, and I celebrate their call and what they're doing to serve Jesus, but it never fit well on me because I knew that I was called to pastor. So there was a lot of frustrating years, and I remember trying to figure out, okay, should I be a counselor? Should I, you know, is there other avenues that I can pursue this ministry thing? And I would always, you know, God would always say, no, you're called to pastor people, male and female. And just wait on me. And by the time I was ordained, 19 years had passed between when I started preparing for ministry and when I actually got ordained. And I don't begrudge that in the sense that God did so many good things in my life through that process. But I don't think it needed to be that long, quite honestly. And so, you know, I guess I now see the younger women coming behind me and wondering, you know, how can we make it not that difficult? It shouldn't take that long. It shouldn't take till your late 30s to kind of find that place. But I didn't have role models. I didn't have women that were doing it, that were wives and mothers and pastors. I didn't have anyone that I could look at and go, yeah, that's what I want to do. And so hopefully as more and more women are given opportunity, there will be more models so that people can go, yeah, you know, this can be done, you know. So, yeah, it was a great journey, but a difficult one.
Right. Cool. Kim, tell us a bit about your story.
Yeah, I was probably about the same age, maybe like 14, 15 years old, when I first knew that God was calling me to something, and I wasn't entirely sure what it was for most of my teen years, but I remember when I was 16, I went to like a Bible college days thing. Even though I was a couple years before graduating, I just knew that I was going to be in Bible college someday, and knew that I was going to be pursuing this call that was on my life. And so as time developed, I knew that I was called to pastor in some capacity. And so when I went to Bible college, Clark and I actually were dating when we went. And so I made it very clear to him, like, this is what I feel called to do. And so even if you decide that this isn't for you, like, this is what I want to do. And so don't hold me back from that. And he wouldn't dare.
She drew a pretty clear line.
She's reminding me right now. Yeah. Yeah. A call to trucking.
I see that hand kind of holding your leg rather tightly, Clark. Yeah.
So I just always knew. And when I went to Bible college, knew. Even when I was there, it never really crossed my mind that I couldn't do it because I was a girl. I just never really thought about that much. I had a really amazing couple in ministry in Joe and Joanne Goodwin when I was growing up. They were the pastors in my home church. And so I just saw Joanne as a woman speaking and being a part of regular church life. So I just always assumed that that's something I could do. And it wasn't until I was in Bible college that I started to hear just different things come up and people saying things like, well, you know, women can't be senior pastors, or they can't lead over men, and just little things started to come up, and I started to question a little bit, but still knew that that's what I was called to do. And then when we started pastoring after graduation, we actually ended up in a ministry situation where there was staff at the church and pastors at the church who were not very supportive of what I felt called to do, and so felt really held back from a lot of the things that I knew that I was supposed to be doing. And it was definitely, those 4 years were a huge struggle and definitely difficult, and part of a journey now that I can look back on and, you know, be grateful for what God taught me during that time, but definitely hard years to figure out, like, how do I fit into this? How do we do ministry as a couple? Where churches, we wanted to work together, but most churches can't hire two people. And what is that going to look like? And what does that mean? And so definitely had to work through some of those things. But it's been a journey to figure out, like, being confident in my call, being okay with what I know God has called me to do, and being a female pastor. When, like you said, Leanne, there isn't a huge, there's a large number of women out there doing it. And so I remember looking for a mentor for years. Like, who can I look up to in this? Who can I look to and see how they're doing it and doing it well? And had a really hard time finding that. But I think I have it much in the same heart as you. I just want to see girls now be able to step into that and rise up to what they're called to do without the same kind of challenges and the same kind of effort.
Yeah. Cool. I'm going to put this question to Darcy and Clark, and whichever one of you wants to jump in first, go for it. But how do you see and feel your wives are gifted, and what has been inspiring particularly to you about their ministry that you've seen over the years?
Leanne is a great kisser.
Wow. Of course.
No. Oh, dear.
Come on. You're embarrassing me.
I didn't think we'd get through an hour without some kind of comment from the McAllisters on that side of things.
No.
14 minutes. Yeah, 14 minutes.
Sorry. I feel like Leanne is a great teacher, she is a great, like, one of the things that I've always admired about her is her way to go deep with people. In fact, I think that actually is what really drew me to her, is that when we would talk, we would actually talk about deep things, and she had this ability to go beyond the surface, and that's reflected in her teaching. And I find that a really, really powerful combination. Mm-hmm. What's been inspiring to me about Leanne's ministry is that although there have been times of real brokenness and hurt and pain, that she ministers without an edge. Mm. And I feel really thankful for that. I don't know if I could handle that if it was this kind of power woman thing. Right. I don't even know how to totally describe that. But if it was ministry with an edge because of the pain and because of the things that she had to overcome, that would be difficult for me. But I see just this beautiful heart for ministry, and I love it. I love working with her.
That's the thing about the call, too. Because in those really difficult years, I used to beg God, can you just let me go do something? Can you let me go and do something? Because I know that I'll be good at something. And because there was no avenue for ministry. But the call of God, when you have a call on your life, you can't, like, God will not let you go. And so then what do you do with that when you don't have an avenue for expression, but God won't let you go? Mm-hmm. And how do you have that that soft heart that continues to be soft? And, you know, like you're saying that it was there. I think sometimes I did get edgy, but I guess I always come around. I don't know. Anyway, it's just...
Oh, Jesus has been very real to you. And there's been great people around you, men and women, who have modeled that kind of godly heart.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Clyde, you know, what about you?
It's pretty neat to sit here and just like two real trailblazers in a sense. Like for... I mean, hear both cries saying, you know, we're looking, and sure, some of those women existed, but maybe they weren't as easily accessible, and the hearts of both Kim and Leanne, and what they want to, how they want to make themselves open to this next generation, so hopefully they can have a little bit of an easier time with their entry into what God's calling to. Kim continually amazes me with her sensitivity to the Spirit. Like, it blows my mind. Mm. I can remember... We were in the interview process coming out of Bible college and driving to another church to interview. And we were actually passing a church in Bowmanville that we later went on to pastor at. And Kim was saying to me, I just can't get these two places off my mind. And one of them is Bowmanville. And it's just really pressed upon me very strongly, Clark, that I feel like we're going to end up here. And I remember thinking in my head, why are we going to? You know, why are we driving past this place that I know? And this place has a youth pastor. And we went on to interview with, and they offered us everything that, I mean, would have ever been enticing at that time. And they had the senior pastor a ton of respect for Kim and really, at one point, even said, Clark, like, I'm almost more convinced that we require Kim here than you. And that was fine with me. I mean, hey, it's great. You know, I'm glad somebody else finally sees that she's the brains of this operation. And we got in the car, and I was convinced that Kim's heart had been won. And I remember saying to Kim, I really just, I don't feel that this place is right. He said, oh, I'm so glad you said it first. Like, I can't get past it. Hmm. And a few months later, that place eventually called. And Kim is continually challenging me with things. Like, I feel like God's telling us to do this. And I keep telling her no. And then she asked me, are you sure? And then I'm forced to think about it, and we pray about it. And I'm just so amazed and so thankful for her sensitivity to the Spirit. And it's proved itself invaluable so many times in the things that we've been through. There was moments that have been difficult, you know, working together as a team, and maybe not everybody quite understanding that or seeing it the way that we do. And at times you feel so guilty. I don't know if you can relate, Darcy, like, but there's times where I felt so guilty. Felt like I was exposing my wife to these things and seeing her hurt as we were working together. And you go, and I remember saying to Kim, what do you want to do? We can't leave. We need to, God's called us here. This is where we need to be. This is where, you know, I'm okay. I'm going to be fine. He's called me. And I'm just so amazed, you know, by those things. So I'm constantly encouraged by Kim's sensitivity to the Spirit and also her ability to teach. Like, there's countless students that come to me after Kim would speak on a Wednesday night. And we're very different in a lot of ways. One of the ways for sure would be in the way that we communicate and how we would speak publicly. But so many students say, Kim has this ability to take these things that are so complex and just help me to understand them in a way where I'm thinking, well, why didn't I get that before?
Mm-hmm.
It's just an amazing gifting. Like, it's just an amazing gifting mm-hmm. that sounds like, you know, is shared. And its benefit is, you know, it's impossible to really calculate. I think some of the things that have been taught to me would probably be, and just again, like inspiring as the word I think they used, Kim's just willingness to persevere and the steadfastness and just to be relentless in her commitment to what God's called her to do. And I don't know if I could do it. I don't know if there's moments where I'd be ready to pack it in. Yeah. You know, I don't know if I could handle some of the criticisms and some of the, you know, well, because of this, sorry, we don't think that Dean you'd be qualified. I can't relate to that. But I'm constantly encouraged that Kim's willingness to continue to persevere mm-hmm. and to, you know, be totally surrendered and submitted to what God's called her to do mm-hmm. in the face of adversity. It's inspiring.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. So here's another question I'm going to throw out to everybody. So totally chime in however you think. It's a bit of a wide open question. How can men and women support each other in ministry, both in a marriage relationship, but beyond that? Because there's probably people listening that aren't necessarily both in full-time, quote-unquote, ministry. How can men and women support each other in ministry, whether they're married, not? How does that look for you guys in your journeys? What are those key areas of support? What does that look like for you practically?
I say move over. Just like just move over. Share. You know, give opportunities. Mm. Release them to lead. Like, I love what was shared just at church, but when Dave spoke and addressed this issue about how God didn't move.
Sorry,
no,
that
I just
was
got
move
an
over.
I just got an amen.
That's a female.
That was an amen. That was it. I was so encouraged that Dave shared the point, and I can't remember who it was that he was quoting when he brought this up, that he didn't remove something from Adam's head, and he didn't remove something from Adam's feet, but he removed something from Adam's side. Mm-hmm. And the symbolism and just the Adam and Eve, the husband and wife, the togetherness and the side-by-side sort of approach. And that's the way that Kim and I approach everything. Mm-hmm. Just together, side-by-side.
There's kind of like a fundamental difference of like looking at that. Like if you were to look at more patriarchal types of movements, the whole idea is that in a family, that the man, the husband, the father, has the call. That the purpose is found in the man. And so wife and daughters come alongside to support the outworking of that purpose. I struggle with that so much because Darcy has purpose. Darcy has a call. But I also have a call. I also have purpose.
Yes, exactly.
And so for us to be married is a strategic partnership between the two of us. And that's what I love, actually, because this isn't all just about Darcy. This isn't just all about me, but it's really like, how has God brought us together, the unique giftings that we share as a couple, and what is he asking both of us to do with those things? How are we going to steward that? So when I flow in that, like when Darcy and I minister together, which we do a lot outside of Living Waters, and when we're really in the flow and relying on one another and there's a back and forth to it, it's so beautiful. Like, I just think, oh my goodness, this is what it means to be married. This is what it means to just that mutuality together, you know? So, I don't know.
How would you say?
Feel very passionate about it, though.
Yes.
I don't know if you can tell.
So here's a more pointed question. Outside of the marriage relationship, like, tell a little bit about your interaction with our lead pastor at the moment and what that has looked like as you were interiming pastor and then Doug came in.
I know the answer.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go for it.
It's about security.
It's about security.
It is about security. And I know that there are many, many men who get insecure if someone is going to do better than them or do as well as them.
It's true.
And so I see Doug as a very secure leader because he empowers people around him. Other lead pastors actually go, huh, when they hear that the pulpit is shared not only with Leanne, but with yourself, Luke, and that it's this broad spectrum of people preaching.
That's what drew us to the church.
Yeah, like it's like there's this opportunity. So I think it's about security. I also think, and this has been something that I feel like I've learned, is that and watched Leanne develop in, is that it's about as a man not expecting her to speak like a man or lead like a man,
right?
But that God's blessed her as a woman, and that there are gifts in leadership as a woman that she can bring to the table that I don't have, and that's okay.
Right.
So it can be different, but I think that the key is security.
Like, I don't think I could do what I do without Darcy being a very secure individual,
yeah.
And to be very certain about who he is and his gifts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think he could do what he does without my blessing. I don't know, it's a kind of a weird thing, but
no.
He'd be miserable. He'd be miserable.
I totally disagree.
Really?
With you. Yeah, like I think my ministry is in large part to the way that you have input it into my life. You raise the bar for me. You call stuff out of me. So I disagree.
Okay. See how easy that was.
That was beautiful.
Same question, Tim. How have you felt supported, both by Clark and then outside of that? Like, you mentioned earlier, when you grew up in the church, you saw that sort of modeled, and that obviously had a big impact.
Yeah, I think that people cheering you on and supporting you is a huge thing, but in the way that, like, men and women work together, I think the thing that I always go back to is I feel like we're constantly asking this question, like, who's the head, who's in charge, who should be the leader? And that's so contrary to what we see in the Bible. Like, the Bible is all about serving. And
right.
So if instead of focusing on, like, who the head is, who should be the leader, who we should submit to, and all those things, if we focus on, like, who can we serve, and
right.
even as leaders, like, in what I'm called to, how can I serve if you, as a male pastor, or how can I serve you? Like, and
right.
if we are in that kind of relationship, so that works in marriage, that works in pastoral roles, in the church, outside the church. And I think that, like, I remember Clark and I, when we got married on our honeymoon, sitting down and having this conversation, and I said to him, like, if you are always putting my needs first, and I'm putting your needs first, then we're not being selfish. Both our needs are getting met, and that's a pretty sweet relationship.
We'll be very, very happy that way, won't we?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like, if it's not about me, for myself, and for you, if it's not about you, it's about each other, then that works. And so we've tried to do that the best we can in our marriage, but also in other areas of our life, too, just saying, like, how can we serve? So instead of focusing on that, instead of taking that approach that we've often seen in the church about, like, who is in charge and how we submit, I think that that's the only way that it works to really look at it in Christian circles.
I had a real defining moment one time when Kim was away for a weekend, and I think Kim had a defining moment that weekend, too, when several years ago when we were in Bowmanville, where we were just at a real interesting point and that we kind of encountered while we were in Bowmanville, and I was just took this weekend, and I just decided I was going to, all of the distractions, everything was going to go on mute, everything was going to be shut off and turned off, and I was just going to take the weekend and really, you know, pursue Jesus and really just cry out to God just for some direction and how we could enter into this season together. And the one feeling that just I felt so pressed on my heart was that the greatest thing that God had called me to was to see my wife, my wife's dreams come true. That the greatest thing that he had entrusted me with was his daughter, you know, was Kim, and that I needed to do everything I could to, for the dreams and the desires and all those pieces that were coming into Kim's life. I had to come along, and I needed to be her biggest fan, even more so than I already was. I needed to love her like Jesus loved the church, you know, and that involves surrender and sacrifice and, you know, all these different pieces. And I just knew that Kim's priorities needed to become my priorities. Kim's dreams needed to become my dreams. And Kim came back, and she had, you know, had some real great time that she had spent with God, you know, and him really speaking to her. And several weeks later, she's penning out dreams of Tarantieras and some of these different pieces that involved some financial investment, you know, on her behalf that I didn't know where that would come from. And everything in what I knew up to that point and everything in how I thought would say, well, we can't afford to do that. But I had these moments where I'm like, no, we're gonna take some risk here. And I think that instills something. Like, I think that brings value and brings encouragement and brings so many of those pieces that I think biblically we're required to bring and encourage one another with, mm-hmm. right? So.
It's definitely been those moments where people, not just Clark, but others as well, have come alongside me and said, like, we see something in you, we believe in you, and really encouraging you to walk out what you really feel called to. I think those are the defining moments. Like, I can look back and name people in my life who've done that. Like, I had a solid youth pastor who let me speak, who really encouraged me, who called me out. Like, just really great mentors in ministry who have done that, and you really hold on to those mm-hmm. things, I think.
So people that step up and specifically say, yes. You need to hear this right now. You've had that as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that they stand out. Like, you hold on to those things in the discouraging moments.
Yeah.
In the moments where you begin to question, like, your confidence and your calling and all these things, you hold on to those things, and you're like, well, if that person saw it in me, then maybe there is a hope that I can get through this.
Yeah,
and they were...
I remember getting a note from Roger and Laurel Strandstad.
Oh, yeah.
In the middle of this bleak desert of no opportunity. Well, I shouldn't say that, because we were ministering in the district with youth work, and I threw myself into that work there.
Yeah, thanks for calling it bleak, eh?
Yeah.
Like, dry.
But
I really was enjoying it at the time.
I remember getting this note card, and basically it was a, we see you. We see you, and there is a call on your life. And it was just like water to my soul.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think one of the ways that you can see people grow and develop is to not only speak words of encouragement and move over, but to be ardent in your defense of them.
Right.
Because I, like, there were a number of times where I had to explain Leanne's or defend Leanne's motives.
Right.
Like, and it's like, I would hear things and I could just sit there or I could not. And it, for me, it was like, no, actually, that's not what's going on
right there.
I can't stand the assumptions that people will have. Like somehow I'm trying to yield authority over Darcy, or you know, wear the pants in the family, or
heard
what,
that one,
like,
a few times.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah. And it's just like, really? You clearly don't know us very well.
It's so foreign. I don't know. This is so foreign to some. And like, oh, this is not the way that we do it, or this is not the way that we understand it. And I mean, we don't understand it any other way. Like, this is just this is ministry as we
ministry. This is marriage. This is life.
This is what we've been called
to
be. This is what we.
Yeah, I remember when we first started ministering together. Like, we had to work it through.
Oh,
work it
out.
So
do
it
you
has
want to talk
just
about
been
that?
Beautiful.
No.
How the sexes work together, it takes time to figure out what that rhythm looks like. Okay.
Totally. Like, it was like,
there's some people sitting here going, I don't know if I can be like those couples because they seem like they got their stuff together.
No. So we were in Ontario.
Oh, we do.
It's just Darcy and Leanne.
Yeah. One of the three kids, yeah.
We were in Ontario doing a timeout for youth pastors, and we were fighting about who was gonna lead. I'm going to be the lead voice in this session. No, I feel like God has called me.
I don't even know if
like
we were talking.
Testimony.
So we were talking, and years later, people would come up and just say, thank you. Like, when you guys shared and worked together like that, it was such a blessing. And we're like, we're totally fighting.
Well, you know, I'll kind of explain that a little bit. And I'll probably take most of the responsibility for that. But in my frustrating years, I actually was resentful towards Darcy. He was my greatest cheerleader, but at the same time, I saw him having opportunities that just were not open to me. Mm-hmm. And it bothered me, and I think I just kind of was resentful. And so when I did have opportunities, I probably grabbed them a little bit too hard,
right.
You know? And as God has been so gracious with me to to give me opportunities and expression, I have found myself just way more relaxed.
Yeah, so to the point where it's just ebb and flow, and I have to talk to Leanne sometimes after our sessions together and say, can you be a little more formal? Rather than trash talk me out loud during my part.
That just happened once.
No. No, it's been more than that.
Especially when we do sessions on ministry and marriage.
There's just been so much fun. Like, I don't know if you're supposed to do this, but we've been high-fiving each other at the end of our messages sometimes.
Yeah. It's fun.
It just feels like this is what we're made to do. Yeah, just made to do it like this.
Yeah, you do the pound. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how do you guys work together when you're working on something? Like, where's Clark strong? Where's Kim strong? And how does that kind of come together?
Can I say one thing? It's kind of funny. I remember when we first started in Bowmanville, we get in there and I'm trying to do the calendar, right? Because we're going to have first shoot night. We got to have a calendar. I need a calendar. These kids need to take it home. I know they're all going to take it home. I'm sure they all put it on their fridge. You print 40, you pick up 41 at the end of the night.
I hate that.
So how did this happen? So I remember saying, hey, Kim, hey, I got this. And I remember Kim going, that's good. And I went, you don't seem convinced, Kim. This is the calendar. If we don't have one, let me take a look at it. Maybe. And then Kim comes out with this piece that's just like, I want to frame that and put that on our wall. This needs to be blown up and put over top of our fireplace, kind of. And I'm like, wow, you're really good at this stuff. And these are things that we'd never, as many years as we had dating and the several months of marriage, we'd never entered into that together yet.
Yeah.
And so there's so much learning, even that's gone on at the college since we've come on staff at end of June. We're like, wow, you're really good at that. Or, hey, maybe I should do this, and we just...
That's what you were trying to say.
I think I probably even stuttered more when I say it. But just gentle suggestions with each other and encouragement. It's just, you realize where each other are strong.
I know Darcy's my favorite guy to talk over sermons with. And I am really strong with structure. And he will take something that's kind of dull and he will help bring the life to it. And I'm so grateful for that input. That place that I'm not strong with, he just comes really strong.
I think the thing that we've learned in the last 5 years or so is to challenge each other to not just stick to our strengths, but to learn how to handle some of our areas that we aren't strong in terms of ministry and leadership.
And why are you smiling, Darcy?
I'm smiling because I remember certain times, I would say to you, Leanne, you're going to have to move from being a micro leader to a macro leader, and it's not going to be fun for you because you like to manage the individual project. But if you're going to go forward in leadership, you have to adjust this. And I also remember you coming to me and saying, that is not good enough. It is a really foggy, muddy sermon structure, and if you preach that, I will walk out.
No. I think I said, let me help you.
But I think that's been the thing as we've grown secure in terms of our gifts, that we also, in the right spirit, challenge each other to grow.
Yeah.
And that's been fun. I think in the last 5 years, I'm incredibly proud of some of the steps of Leanne doing ministry that nobody else would know that she's facing down a fear by doing.
Right. Because you get to see the inside of what God is doing.
I get a front row seat to that. So I know that the thing that she's doing right now, she's never done before, and she's scared of her mind, but she's doing it because we've talked about growing and growing in God and growing in leadership, and she's doing it. And
that's good.
And I love that. And nobody else would know that she's taken me apart and challenged me. That needs to shift over and nobody else knows that,
right?
But for us to be secure enough in that place to really grow, and I like that.
Right. Kim, do you have anything to add in terms of how men and women can complement each other?
Yeah, I think like Clark and I have seen over the years how that's worked with us working together, because we always had a little bit of a joke. He's more of like the evangelist, go out there, preach a solid message, people come running to the altars. He'll be talking to somebody in the streets and they'll, you know, make a decision to come to the church or to follow Jesus. Like, he's just always been like that. So we've always joked that like he catches the fish and I clean them. Because okay. I am more like, I want to sit down with people and help them like walk through the Bible, answer their questions, help them understand some of the complex things, make them simpler. Right. And so when we were in youth ministry together, that's the way that we worked. Like, he would kind of be the front person up on the microphone a lot and getting people excited and passionate about what God was doing. And then I would lead some of the discipleship programs and after school things and do some of the teaching and things like that. And we just saw our gifts really complement each other. And so I think like in marriage or when you're working on a team with people, it's neat to see teams come together where different people have different strengths and they can do that. It was frustrating for me because I often, because he was more of the front person, and I was speaking and doing things like that too, but he was more the front person, he got credit for everything. So mm-hmm. people see the person with the mm-hmm. microphone and they're like, he's such a great youth pastor, he's this and he's that. And there were times where I just wanted to tell people, like, okay, but you know I do all the work, right? Like, that's what... That's
I wrote what the sermon, I did the PowerPoint, I did the calendar.
I ironed his shirt.
Like, there were times...
That's probably the only thing I did do, actually. Kim was too busy typing up my sermon.
There were times in our ministry where we would go places, and a couple of times we're introduced as, this is the youth pastor and this is his wife. And, you know, this is the leader. He's such a great youth pastor. And Kim is such a great support of what Clark's doing. And I just wanted to look at them and be like, I just want to give you a list of everything that mm-hmm. I'm doing and all the things that I'm contributing to. But realize that I didn't need to do that. But it can be frustrating mm-hmm. sometimes when you're putting all this effort in, you're putting all this work in hours and hours and hours a week, and there's no recognition. It can be hard, but it really makes you, like, there were many times where I had to say to myself, like, why are you doing this? Are you doing it for credit? Are you doing it because you want people to think you're a good pastor? Or mm-hmm. are you doing it because this is what I've called you to do? And I said many times, like, I wanted to quit so bad a couple times. And the reason that I gave was that I could get a job, like a secular job in any other place and be respected and be paid and be, you know, people really appreciate and enjoy. Yeah, and people really appreciate and enjoy what I was doing. But there are times in the church where you just have to, you know, make it not about you and do what you're called to do.
I used to spiritualize that, though. When I would have those feelings, I used to think, oh, Leanne, you just need to get over this and get your identity in Christ and all of that. Mm-hmm. Did that for years. And I don't, obviously, we need our identity in Christ. Our motivation needs to be pure, all of those things. But also, we're human beings mm-hmm. with needs. We have a need for mastery, we have a need for recognition of what we bring to the table, we have a need to exercise our gifts and those kinds of things. And that's why we're in community, because we actually meet those needs for one another. Mm. And so
by giving, by serving, we're feeling involved and connected.
Yeah, exactly. And so for the community to actually see and name women and their leadership gifts, that is an important part of community. And I just don't spiritualize it anymore. Like, yes, my identity has to be in Christ, but I also need affirmation from my community that that's part of what they do for me.
And ideally, that's what happens. Like, ideally, when you're a part of a strong community, that is what happens. But I think there are seasons, I'm sure you've experienced this, where it's not happening in the community that you're a part of. And so you really have to wrestle with some of those things, and what does it mean for me, and is it okay? And, mm-hmm. and it can be very difficult.
Right. So what would you guys say? This is, again, just out to everybody. What words of advice would you have for women who are feeling called to serve the church through their giftings, whatever that would look like? Maybe if they're feeling a lack of opportunity or opposition, and what kind of steps can they take to move forward? So when you think back to those times that were difficult, what would you say to, if you could travel back in time and talk to younger Kim, younger Leanne, and say, listen, this is just what you need to hold on to right now. You've shared a little bit of that, but what would you grab a hold of and say?
I think I would encourage female leaders who are having a hard time finding a position or finding their place in the church or in ministry, that leadership isn't about position, it's about your influence. And that's what I realized, is that I could have a great deal of influence whether someone was recognizing me with a title or whether they were recognizing me as a pastor instead of the pastor's wife or, or whatever. It was about the influence that I had. And while having a title is, you know, it makes you feel like people take you seriously and it gives you a little bit of validity sometimes, you can still do ministry and do leadership without that. And yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I had to learn, and encouraging other girls that even in a certain season, if you don't feel like you have those opportunities, lead anyway. If you feel like God's calling you to something, do it the best that you can without the position that you feel like you need. And I mean, we would all love to see girls come into and women come into these positions, but it doesn't always happen the way that we want it to.
You don't have to be asked to lead to lead. You can lead.
Absolutely. And girls need to feel secure and confident enough to do that, because we question ourselves. We've talked about this a lot. We question ourselves and try and make excuses for why we shouldn't do it. Like, well, somebody else will probably be better at it, or maybe somebody else can do it, or they probably don't want me, or I don't have the right giftings, and we make excuses. But sometimes you just need to be confident and step into what you know you need to be doing.
I think I would say don't give up. Keep going. I totally agree with what you're saying about you can be influential without position and that kind of thing. Don't force your way. You know, I have moments or snapshots in my mind where I look back and go, wow, that was ugly. Because it was resentment. It was, you know. I have something to prove. I want, you know, whatever. And it just looks ugly. And God is faithful. He really is. Like, if you had told me 8 years ago that that I would be on staff at Living Waters, that I'd, you know, be developing leaders, that I would be preaching regularly, all of those things, it wasn't even in the realm of possibility for me. And yet, when you're faithful with what's in front of you, and when you try to keep your heart soft and are teachable, God will make a way.
For me, I think, like I've worked with a lot of young women leaders in terms of missions and apprentices at our district office. And in that, I encourage them to get a Boaz and a Naomi. And what that means to me is to have an advocate who's a male leader who can act on their behalf, have their best interests at heart, and have a mentor, a female leader mentor. And that kind of combination opens up a lot of doors and sharpens them, develops them, makes it better. And I feel like that's a way to keep the edges off and allow growth to happen. So I recommend that for young female leaders all the time.
You know, the Boaz thing, if you look, say, through the history of the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada, any woman that has done really well or you know, what is not doing well when it comes to ministry, but like has, I don't know,
Seen fruit
and all that, all of them will have a man that's close to them, whether it's a husband or a father or a brother or just a man who somehow helps open doors for them. So that I was studying that last year, and I thought, very interesting that all of them have that. So I feel like my Boaz is definitely Darcy, but it's also Doug in just the way he has opened doors and given me opportunities, and I'm so grateful.
So this sort of sense of you're going to have to go forward, you're going to have to carve some paths, but don't think that you have to do that entirely alone, right? Build that community around yourself and look for that strategically.
Even like it, so even if it's not in your local setting, in your broader setting, to have those voices of encouragement and words of life and words of correction, you know, like so that there's that kind of, those kind of truth talkers in your world.
Let's close with some stories. So, especially the ladies at the table, can you share with us some stories of women that have done inspiring things, whether they're mentors or people that you've mentored and poured into? I know, Kim, through like a lot of Tattered Tiara stuff, you've seen some young women step up in some incredible ways. Mm-hmm. What are some stories you've gone, that is just remarkable, what a girl has done?
I think, exactly what you're saying there, with some of the girls that I've been able to work with, some of the young women, to see them overcome some of the things and the things that people have said to them, and even abuse and things like that in their life. And it's really cool for me even to be at the Bible College right now and have some of those girls there.
Right.
And where people are saying to them, like, really, are you sure that you can do this? And they've questioned, like, do I have too much of a past? Am I really able to do this? You know, my pastor told me he doesn't understand why I'm here. My dad told me he doesn't totally support me. And seeing those girls really rise up and do it is the most encouraging thing for me. Like, it gives me life to be able to look at them and see their lives and see them not getting discouraged because of that, and saying, like, you can go ahead and have your opinion, but this is what I want to do. And just the restoration that's happened and them coming into their own has been amazing for me. So it keeps me going.
Yeah, to see some of the young lives that we see at the college right now that God, you know, ever so graciously let us be a part of when we were in Bowmanville. Like, Kim probably wouldn't say it, but I will. Like, they had somebody to look to. Like, these young girls had somebody that they could look to, that they could look up to, you know, that they could aspire to be like, and that they saw, you know, living a lifestyle of grace and of you know, a quest towards holiness and purity and just, you know, focus and direction and drive, all these beautiful things. And that's who I want to be like. That's who I want to get close to. And Kim, you know, pouring into those girls and being there for those girls, it's helped these girls, you know, towards restoration and to, you know, doing what it is that God's called them to do. And they had somebody that's, you know, barely in front of them, just paving, or, you know, laying the interlocking just a few steps ahead. But they're following really, really close.
I always tell them, I get so excited when I have the chance to sit and talk with them and hear about their passion and their lives, because some of them have such greater gifts than I have, like, just to communicate. And there's like a couple of them that I always tell them, I'm so excited to see what they're going to do with their lives, like, because I just know that they're going to have such incredible impact. And so for me, even for a season, to have like a little hand in that and to help to encourage them and call that out of them is the most exciting thing in the world for me, because I get to see firsthand like the way that they're going to impact other people's lives, and it just gets me so excited.
That's awesome. Darcy and I know many women around the globe that are doing incredible things, and actually international mission has been historically wide open for women. So there's people like Clarice in Chennai, India, who has started. How old is she? She's probably close to 80 years old, and she's doing like an outreach to.
She's building a seniors complex.
Yes. Like, it's crazy.
It's called Teacup Ministries. Yeah. And it was so funny because here's this she ministered to the Maasai in Africa, and then she was a captain in the Indian Army, and then has gone back to Chennai to minister to seniors, though she is one. So funny because we went to see her center, and her driver wasn't there, and she couldn't find it.
She didn't know where she lived. That very, very confusing. Anyway,
She would be an example.
Yeah, Deborah Surgising, who lives in Turkana, which is remote Kenya, has a medical clinic out in the middle of nowhere. Nancy Gibson, who ministered in Romania with Deb, and they started a young adults ministry in Bucharest with a coffee shop and, you know, near a university district, like just crazy, crazy, crazy stories. And what we have found is that women just do it.
Yeah.
Right? They don't wait for permission in the sense of like, that position or that.
Clark's laughing.
Why?
Carolina never asked
permission. One of the things we always say is that well-behaved women rarely make history. Is one of the things. But it's true. It's just go for it. Because I love being in your home and seeing these dream but then I'm just so fortunate to be around somebody like Kim who's doing, you know, and eventually taking it and putting it to action. And when it's the doing of those dreams that have been put in her, that it's changing lives. Like, you guys are seeing it. Totally. And you're so right. They're doing it. It's,
and we have a Canadian history, a heritage of women who do ridiculously awesome things. Yeah. We think about the women that that lobbied for the vote for Canadian women way back in the, I'm not sure, the 20s or so. They were preachers' daughters that saw some injustices and stood up and said, we got to do something about that. I doubt that they kind of went through all the correct lines, but they just did and went with what God had on their heart, and it changed history, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think there's so much potential that's sitting in women, in Living Waters, things that they're that is in them that we just need to call out and say, go for it.
I think that's the word, is calling it out. And I think that as a man sitting at this table, that's part of my thing. I want to call it out.
Yes,
you do. And that's the thing, like, I think that the future is bright, right? Like, we have these girls and these women who are finally realizing, like, I have something to say, and I have a call in my life, and I have something to do, and they're starting to rise up, and there's guys like you, Luke, and Darcy, and Clark, and Dave Demchuk, and Doug,
tons
and all
of guys,
these guys,
yeah,
who are coming along and saying, these girls do have something to say,
yes,
like, they do have it, and
yeah,
so I think that, like, our future is bright as women begin to realize that, and as guys are realizing that, like, yeah, we can't do it on our own, like, we can't fulfill this great commission to go and make disciples of all nations,
yeah,
like, we can't do that by ourselves, like, let's do it together,
yeah,
let's complement one another in our gifts and in the things that we're called to, and let's do it
and
well,
it,
and that's,
like,
exciting.
Like Darcy said, there needs to be, earlier, there's a, needs to be a measure of security,
mm-hmm,
in order to release.
In the guys,
and,
yeah,
and so it's a measure of, hey, you know what, I gotta put my ego, my reputation, my desires, my selfish ambitions aside, what is the best for the kingdom?
Mm-hmm.
And in order so that all people may know, I can't do that probably just on me hoarding and keeping everything to myself and trying to keep every female at bay and be so careful what we allow them to or not to do, especially on stage on a Sunday. Ridiculous. It's just ridiculous. There's some security and leadership and the calling out and the releasing of ladies to do what it is they've been called and purposed and appointed to do, we're gonna see the kingdom advance, and we're gonna see that commission fulfilled.
Yeah.
Now, have you lost anything, you personally?
See, that's so cool you asked that, because when I was at that place where I felt like God is telling me the greatest thing is to step, is to serve Kim and to see her dreams come true.
Your ministry has been
everything
multiplied
from that
too.
From that day forward, I've watched is the whispers from, you know, around an altar at Lakeshore Pentecostal Camp, these quiet, you know, things inside my heart that I've only shared with a few people. I've watched those things,
yeah,
come to pass. I've watched those things happen. Didn't need a website. Didn't need, you know, some break, coming out sort of, you know, party or whatever. It happened. And I haven't been perfect in it, but I've done my best to be obedient to what God told me that weekend. And in doing that, and in being the best husband that I can be, and serving alongside Kim and encouraging her in her dreams, God's fulfilled, you know,
so there's
what
more,
he promised.
There's more than enough, right?
Yeah.
More than
so
enough.
Much more.
I think the,
so much more.
The best leaders are the ones who see gifts and empower others.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then things start multiplying. Like,
mm-hmm,
that's multiplication leadership.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. It's not about being, you know, who's the best speaker. No,
mm-hmm,
it's like, who's the best multiplier, who's the best empowerer,
mm-hmm,
of others, developer,
mm-hmm,
of others, releaser of,
mm-hmm,
others.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go there.
I've heard three sort of main thoughts tonight. I've heard about security, especially security in Christ. I've heard support. Let's support each other so that we can serve, so,
mm-hmm,
we can serve the world. And that is really sort of what it's about. So thanks for joining us for the discussion tonight. We're just coming up to an hour now. I really appreciate you guys. Thanks for your time and your energy and your thoughts. And wondering if maybe we can just close in prayer.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to be heard at different times throughout the week, maybe throughout the years. But I think God can,
mm-hmm,
work through that anyway. So maybe,
mm-hmm,
Kim, would you just pray,
absolutely,
for the people that are going to be hearing this?
Yeah, for sure. God, God, I just thank you for the thoughts and the ideas and the conversation that you've stirred up in our hearts. God, I thank you that you are walking with us every step of the way. Father, I pray right now for all of the girls, all the women who are out there who are feeling some kind of a call to leadership or call to ministry. Father, I pray that you would be with them right now, wherever they are, whatever setting they find themselves in. God, I pray that you would help them to not get discouraged and to not shy away from what it is that you put on their heart, but that they would walk in boldness, that they would be able to walk in confidence in what you've called them to. Father, I pray that you would put people around them in their life, male and female, who can call things out of them, who can encourage them and strengthen them. God, I pray that you would help guys even, help the males around us to see the potential in the girls who are in their lives, to not be threatened, to not be afraid of what it might make them look like. But God, I pray that we would learn what it means to work together as a church, what it means to serve each other, what it means to really come alongside each other with purpose to serve and to see the kingdom advance. Father, I thank you that you have things that you want to speak to each one of us. I pray that we would continue to be sensitive to what you're doing in our lives, that we wouldn't let anger or bitterness creep in, that we wouldn't let, when people have different viewpoints about this issue, that we wouldn't close them off from being able to have a relationship with them. God, I thank you for what you're doing in our midst. I thank you for what you're doing in Living Waters Church, and I pray that you would continue to move and continue to spur us on to do well. Amen.
Thanks for joining us, and we won't see you next time, but you'll hear us next time.
You're very careful in that.